Hey, friend. How you doing?
All right. How are you?
I am excellent. I'm so thrilled to be here. I appreciate you inviting me to come on.
Oh, you know what?
What?
AJ messaged me earlier and said, listen, there's an emergency. I'm not going to be able to make shows the show
Oh,
tonight.
No.
And I said,
hope all is well.
I hope all is well. And I won't get into what it is. It's his business. And if he wants to share it, he can.
But we wish him well. And we hope everything gets worked out smoothly for you, AJ.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. AJ does look different, Chris. You're right.
Yes. AJ has like
AJ does look
hair. Little bit, right?
Yeah.
AJ's donned a little bit of lip gloss, right? We're getting a little lip gloss popping for AJ. That's how we're rolling.
Yeah, for sure. So we wish AJ nothing but the best, and hopefully everything works out. He said he will be watching at some point.
Okay.
Hopefully he says hi. I told him that I was getting Haley on the show, and he hasn't read it yet. So I'm sure he will see it. But how are you?
I'm doing great. Happy Sunday. It's a beautiful sunny day. And in South Dakota, that's a nice thing. In Canada, you get what that's about. Like, it's like, oh, it's springtime. Oh, I don't have to be a vampire anymore. Oh, how exciting.
Yes.
Or, you can be a vampire on the beach in your goth outfit if you want to. But, you know.
I will say the weather was really nice today. It was really, really nice. It's actually quite warm out right now. And
beautiful, beautiful Sunday. Happy spring, everyone.
And just think, what, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we had a snowstorm?
I mean,
two weeks ago, I think. Yeah.
That is the land that we live in. Yes. That's how.
Yes.
Unfortunately. That's the bipolar nature of what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just right after spring started. We had more snow then than we did during the winter.
Yeah. Global warming, it's a real thing, yo. Like,
I don't know about
that. Right. We be experiencing all the weirdness.
Are you a big global warming?
You know, I am that person that I'm like, if we would just let nature do what she do, she'd be able to fix it all. Look at Chernobyl. Look at how nature just took back over Chernobyl. And, you know, Earth made a new kind of fungus that eats radioactive whatever. And because nature is amazing. Let it do what it do. Right? That's what I say.
I told, I was in the back room with Carmine before Haley came up. And I said, listen, Carmine. Haley's
Carmine.
Full of energy.
Carmine.
She's going to take over the show. And
your name makes me want to say coffee talk. It makes me want to bring that in a little bit. I'm going to try not. I'm going to try not to like that's my silliness that wants to come out. But he can teach me a New York accent later when he comes onto my podcast to talk about his acting stuff. He can teach me the New York accent. Help me out with that.
Yeah, there you go. And the reason, and I was just about to say, the reason why I know Carmine is because we're with the same talent agency. We have the same agent. So that's how I met Carmine. And I told Carmine I'm going to tell this story because I think it's extremely funny.
I'm ready to hear it.
And every time I see him, I think about this commercial. Now, have you ever seen a commercial on TV? And I think it was international. I'm pretty sure it was international commercial that is for mac and cheese.
Okay.
There's two guys sitting in a sauna and one guy is making the mac and cheese on, you know, those rocks.
Oh, the on the sauna rocks,
and there's two people sitting there just in towels and they're staring at this guy making this mac and cheese. I'm sure you've seen the commercial. I'm sure people out there have seen this commercial. Well,
somebody get in the comments and find that on YouTube and just share it with everyone so that everyone can like do it.
Well, Carmine was one of those people in the towel.
I mean, listen, I'd be there for mac and cheese too. I tell you what, I'm not there for the sauna. I want the snacks. So I understand.
So every time I
support it 100%.
Every time I see Carmine or see him somewhere, I picture him in a towel. And it's like
that makes him feel all warm and fuzzy and happy inside. And he's just so glad to be brought on and have a conversation with us now.
So when I saw our agent threw a Christmas party for everybody on the roster in December.
Oh.
So when I walked up to Carmine, I go, I had to shake my head because all I saw was him in a towel.
Oh, come on now. It can't be that bad if you keep picturing it, right? So, somebody find that, put it in the chat.
I'm telling you, Mac and cheese. Yeah, it does stand for macaroni and cheese. It's the Kraft. It's Kraft Dinner. That is the company name.
Because that's what you say in the Canada land, right? Kraft Dinner.
What do you guys say?
We say mac and cheese.
I say mac and cheese too.
Well, yeah.
And just going back, every time I see him, to be honest, that's not the way I want to picture him.
Okay, but, you know what though, Carmine, for you, because if you get the whole wide world to picture you in a towel, then kudos to you, friend. Like, cheers.
Have you ever heard of when you're on stage, they tell you to get past the stage fright, you look at the audience and
you imagine them nude. There you go. See? Like,
I picture him with a towel constantly. So when I'm on the show,
he's just trying to help make you comfortable.
I know. So when I'm doing this show today, I'm going to avoid looking at him because I see him in a towel. So
no, it's supposed to help you feel better and not be scared. That's what it is. See, he's
so I want people
to make things easier and smoother for you.
So I'm sure the people in Canada saw that commercial. I'm not sure if it was international. We'll ask them. I'm pretty sure it was. But have you ever heard of Kraft mac and cheese?
Oh, I know Kraft mac and cheese. I just, you know, we don't like, I think Kraft Dinner, there's a bare naked lady.
Oh, it was found. It was found.
I mean, I knew that they would. Brilliant. Thank you, Chris. Is it Binder? Thank you, Chris. Appreciate the research. High fives to you. I will go watch that later.
It was found. It was found.
Because the internet is a wondrous place.
Yeah, there you go. So we're going to have a great show. We got a great guest. Carmine is a retired criminal defense attorney, and we're really looking forward to it. And when I told Haley who we were interviewing today, she went, oh, shit.
It's super exciting. I'm there. I'm ready for it. Like, listen, he's a member of the Florida Bar and the Law Society of Ontario. Yeah. Undergrad in sociology and psychiatric disorders with a minor in criminology. I think this is fascinating. And I bet that sociology, like I bet the psychiatric stuff really helped out in, I'm fascinated to see where the overlap is there with the cases, but been in the courts in 38 of the 50 US states and also has been in the courts in Ontario and Quebec, Canada. Majority of cases on serious criminal matters, including of course, organized crime, which means I have to ask questions about The Sopranos just a little bit. Just a little bit.
Okay, here we go. Here's Carmine. Now, before we get started, Carmine, I'm sorry I had to tell that story.
Thank you for sharing that. I do appreciate it.
I mean, listen, any publicity is good publicity, right? Like, get your stuff out there.
Well, the funny part is, a couple years ago, I was out in Montreal, and apparently when Montreal made the playoffs, they were showing that commercial over and over again. So I'm in Montreal that summer after the playoffs. I'm walking down the street and I hear, "Hey, Monsieur KD, they're calling out to me."
Oh, I love that. That's fantastic. I mean, come on. You want to get somebody coming up and wanting a selfie for that, right? Well, why not?
Let me tell you, it doesn't matter what I've done, the other types of movies or television shows I've done. This commercial literally got me the greatest exposure of anything else I've done.
I mean, take it where you can get it, right? Like, if it works, it works. Roll with it.
And as Brian said,
Go ahead, Carmen. Go ahead.
Yeah, as Brian said, you know what? Exposure, wearing a towel in a sauna, what more exposure than that, right?
Yeah, right? Like, and it's a great place to get your start. Hey, at least you got to relax and chill out, and I really hope you got to eat some of the mac and cheese later.
Did they serve you?
Okay, see? Carmine. There you go. Carmine. You got a sauna, you got snacks, you got publicity. What more could you ask for?
Carmine, do me a big favor. Take off your glasses and do that face for me that when you're staring at that guy. Do it.
I love it. It's fantastic.
Haley, I'm telling you, you have to go watch this commercial.
I will.
It is absolutely hilarious. And it's true because I was talking to Ilona about that commercial. And how every time I see you, I think of that commercial. She had a good chuckle. She was saying, it's interesting that commercial blew up. It blew up to something huge.
Well, because you're just meant to do something even bigger than that. We'll call it in from the multiverse. Next thing you're going to have, like, you're going to be in an Adam Sandler movie or something. And when you are, you better not forget your friends.
Oh, so I was just told that that's the wrong video that Chris put in there, but I'm sure Chris is going to look for it.
Oh,
if
yeah,
I find it, I will send you the link for it. Okay, Haley. And then I'm going to put it up. I'm actually going to put the commercial on my Facebook timeline.
Ooh, do it. There we go. Everybody can check it out. Get you some more exposure.
Yeah, there you go. But you know what, Cameron, I really, really appreciate you taking the time out to sit down with us and chat with us. Basically, let me start off, Haley, with the first question, because I know eventually you're going to take over. I'm just going to have to sit here and look pretty.
You are.
So why don't you share a bit about your background and how you got into criminal law?
Well, my background is in white collar crime, which means I've focused on criminal law, criminal procedure, trial procedure, incorporation, tax law, estate law, a number of different areas of law that has to come together when looking at a white collar crime. And having done that, that kind of evolved into more of a what would be referred to as organized crime defense type of work. Quite frankly, it may sound like a beginning of a joke, but all of my clients were innocent. And
of course they were. I'm sure that never ever happens to you where everyone just says, "Oh yeah, sure. Of course they were. Of course they were."
And you know, they were acquitted and or charges withdrawn, and it's a good feeling knowing that we were able to do such an effective job for them.
Cool.
So I do just want to ask a little bit then. I mean, going off of some of those things that you're working on. So are you getting people who are maybe being, you know, wrongfully investigated for something because of maybe something like bigger that's above them kind of that, you know, anything like that where they're sort of the patsy situation?
That does occur. It does occur. Mm-hmm. A lot of the investigations, interestingly enough, start somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And from there, they kind of link things together. They link individuals together. And next thing you know, they just kind of follow it along from group to group to group until they come across something that they think may be of some kind of substantial interest.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get a lot of that going on. So they'll start off with one group, and then you hear about these arrests. They refer to them as projects. So it could be Project ABC, Project 1, 2, 3, whatever the case is.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll go in and they'll conduct raids, and they'll arrest a group of people, bring them in, and then the newspapers will refer to different projects. And from there, you kind of, if you follow it along through the news reports, you'll see that these projects kind of linked together as it goes along.
Okay.
And that could be anything from money laundering to drug trafficking, to gambling, prostitution, murder for hire, or just murder.
So are these things where maybe you have clients then who are sort of, I guess, caught up in like as a side person to something and they're investigated out of maybe something they're not privy to?
Correct.
Sort of? Okay.
Exactly. Yes.
So can you maybe talk then a little bit about, I mean, this is sort of some of the flaws that we see in the justice system generally, right? That you there's a little bit of more trial and error than maybe we would like to see, that you do see a lot of people who are innocent or who are kind of just caught up in the wrong situation and don't really know what's going on, that, you know, it can end up really destroying someone's life and they don't have anything to do with it. Like, can you talk a little bit maybe about what you have experienced in that sort of realm?
Oh, certainly. The one thing that the overtone is the fact that most of the time the law enforcement gets the information from an informant.
Right.
And these informants are trying to get themselves off of something or trying to get some kind of benefit or whatever the case may be. And a lot of times these are people that, well, they don't have the greatest of scruples. So they will embellish, they will create, they will lie, mm-hmm. and implicate people in the process. That's mm-hmm. one form of the of the errors that occurs. The other form could be, for instance, let's say you and Brian are talking about a criminal endeavor. Mm-hmm. And I know nothing of it. And I call you, Haley. Hey, how you doing? This and that. And how's your garden doing? Well, this year, not too well. Well, all of a sudden, your garden becomes a code word to law enforcement.
Oh, okay, sure.
Now, because the two of you might be on a wiretap, because I spoke with you and we had a conversation which may to them sound a little offbeat, then mm-hmm. I have a wiretap.
And so then they're listening to you. And if you talk about gardening with the next person, that next person might be implicated too. And really, you're just talking about gardening.
Exactly.
Interesting. Interesting.
I can share a quick story with you.
Yeah,
please.
This occurred a number of years ago. And there were two families, the family in Montreal and the family in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And the elderly in the family would get on the phone and they would talk about making the jars that year. Well, of course, the jars are the tomato sauce. You know, sure. The canning process.
Doing canning, yeah.
Italian referred to the jars. Well, somehow the investigation turned to them, and they ended up, part of the family was down visiting in New Jersey. They end up raiding one of the homes and arresting everyone, thinking that the whole conversation about jars was a code thing going on, and that they were dealing in narcotics.
These poor people who are just trying to make spaghetti sauce or salsa. I mean, it's something that I guess is kind of like, it's probably upsetting for some people to hear, because to some degree, that's a little bit of like unconscious bias coming out, right? Like just a different cultural way of saying something, just because mm-hmm. they would say jars instead of canning, you know, whoever is listening to that or hearing that for whatever reason, like just not having knowledge of that other culture, like makes them assume things that are incorrect.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, so I imagine you must have run into things like that also, you know, just in general, that sort of someone's culture or a misunderstanding of someone's culture being a reason that they're implicated.
Oh, well, exactly. The stigma's there, and and in this case here, they were speaking Italian, and they had an Italian officer who was interpreting the audio tapes, and it was the officers who turned around and said, "Well, they're speaking in code." And that's where the whole thing kind of grew from there.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It's interesting. That's an interesting story.
Well, I was just saying, but it's one of those things that I think makes a lot of people mistrustful of law enforcement, of, you know, of the criminal justice system in general, right? Do you maybe have any... I mean, I guess that's why people like you are important, right? Because as much as we might make the jokes of oh, you know, sure, your clients are innocent, you know, and, mm-hmm. and again, something funny. Like, no, there really are people who really do need to have defense because they really aren't doing anything untoward. They really aren't doing anything, you know. So do you have maybe more hopeful stories that are? Yeah, just look pretty, Brian. That's all we need you to do. That's all we need you to do. But do you have stories maybe that are a little bit opposite, or maybe can you talk a little bit about just, you know, yourself and how, you know, you and maybe your legal team did help with things like that, or maybe could give people a little glimmer of hope that it's not as bad as we think it is?
Well, at the end of the day, the system does work, hopefully, most of the time. And if the prosecutors or the crowns, depending if you're looking at the U.S. or Canada, if they're going into it with a clear mind and without bias and without a goal or something to gain, then most of the time the system works. Okay. Yeah. Now, my concern is we've seen in Canada often where people have been wrongfully convicted and they've done a number of years in incarceration and later on to find out that that they were in fact innocent because, you know, they do DNA testing or evidence comes out, whatever the case is. Now, the good thing is in that aspect, in Canada, a life sentence is 25 years.
And you know what? I'm glad you said that, Carmine, because I was going to ask you that. I was going to ask you that question. Why is it our life sentence is 25 years and the state's is actual life? It's not 25 years. So why is there such a big difference between the two? I just, 25 years to me is not life. And I just don't understand why it's like that.
I mean, I have my own perspectives I'll throw in, but.
Okay.
I think that with Canada being a kinder, gentler.
Here we go.
Country.
I'm sorry.
Well, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Where the U.S., the first off, the U.S. Still has capital punishment, the death penalty in many states. Texas, from if I recall correctly, has the highest rate of executions of all states, and followed by I think Florida and I can't remember the other ones, but I know Texas and Florida for sure. In the U.S., a life sentence is literally you go in vertically and come out horizontally if you're given a life sentence.
No easier way to put it, I think.
There really isn't. otherwise, you're given a number of years. You're given 10 years, 15 years, whatever the case is, but 25 years. But a life sentence in the U.S. is literally life. And then you hear about these cases where serial murderers or multiple murders where the judge convicts him to multiple life sentences. And it almost sounds comical. But there is a basis for that because on appeal, should any of the other cases fall apart, then you still have the other convictions of a life sentence that stands.
Oh, okay. That makes complete sense. That's I get when, because you do hear that a lot in Canada, they got multiple life sentences rather than just life.
Exactly.
I believe there was one recently, the guy that drove down Yonge Street in his truck and killed, 17, 18 people. Mm-hmm. He got, remember that guy a few years back on Young Street? And he got multiple life sentences.
Right,
exactly. And I'm thinking to myself, why not just say life? But now, hearing your explanation on that, it makes complete sense now.
So way here, now you have convictions that will stick, despite the fact some may be overturned during appeal or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I literally live 2-minute walk from where he was arrested.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm at Young and Shepherd where it basically happened. I don't know if you guys saw it. I'm sure you saw it, Carmine. I'm not sure if you saw it, Haley, but they actually have footage where you see him being arrested and the cops telling him to drop whatever he was holding. It actually ended up, they thought he was holding a gun, but in actual fact, it was a phone. He was pretending it to be a gun, and they arrested him. It's all on camera, and get a chance to look at it because it's really, really quite interesting. In fact, I even met somebody at the gym that I work out at that is a correctional officer in that prison that he's staying. And there's two people. There's one person we've talked about on this show, and that's Bruce MacArthur. Mm-hmm. And they're staying in the same jail together. And apparently this correctional officer told us saying that Bruce MacArthur is just a brilliant man. Just a very, very smart man. But the other guy, and I can't recall his name now, but the other guy, he is not all there, not all there together. And the difference between the two is Bruce MacArthur planned these things out. And this guy, it was all on impulse. And apparently, I think he had some type of autism.
Well, see, that was a question I was going to ask, you know, because that I think does maybe it's a question that I have. When you look at someone who does something like that and you get the multiple life sentences to keep them from, you know, obviously you don't want them out in society if they're going to do things like that, you know, but is there a conversation that is being had at all? I think it would be valuable to have. Are some of these people just suffering from a mental illness and really they need to be in a place where they're getting mental health care or psychiatric care, right? You know, going back to like maybe a little bit of the psychiatric disorders that, that you kind of have a background in as well, you know, is that something you see too, where people are really maybe more in need of treatment and that that could have been an answer to their behavior that landed them
question.
In prison?
Great question, well, Haley. Yeah. Great question.
Well, now you're verging to what is referred to NCR, not criminally responsible. Mm-hmm. And to be able to prove that, there's a huge burden to be able to prove that a person was not criminally responsible when they carried out an act. They cannot know the outcome of their act. And there's a number of other things. I don't want to get too involved in that, but NCR is extremely hard to prove, and especially when it comes to cases where people deliberately murder someone. And as the Van case that we're talking about, they tried to raise the defense that he was not criminally responsible on a couple of different levels, and that failed because he obviously knew what the outcome of his actions would have been.
Yeah. And then on top of that, he went out and rented a van.
Right. There was some planning that was involved, deliberate actions that were taken for him to be able to carry this out.
So can you... Yeah. Like, is it, so the other thing then that comes up for me is like, okay, so like compare that then to like a crime of passion sort of defense, right? So like, where is sort of like the burden there? Like, so if, I mean, obviously, okay, if you're not mentally capable of understanding the consequences of your actions and you have to really prove that, like, okay, what about a situation where it's a, in the moment of rage of whatever, right? Like what makes that a different kind of defense?
It makes it a different kind of murder.
Like, what are the legal parameters, I guess, or definitions for that?
Well, you're no longer looking at premeditated. You're looking at the heat of the moment. You're looking at the spur of the moment. So that's why there are different levels of murder. And manslaughter, whatever the case is. And that's why the law allows for that. And a lot of times, the officers would rather undercharge the individual and overcharge them. In other words, if you want to charge someone with first degree murder, then you have to prove a series of different things, where second degree murder could be something where it's a spur of the moment.
Interesting. Because I was a private investigator for about 6 years. And I always asked this question to people: what do you think is worse? Because there's different types of private investigators. You got your ones that work in retail stores and ones that actually sit in the car and watching for, you know, either fraud or domestic dispute or marital problems or whatever it may be. I always ask people, what do you think is worse, theft or fraud? It's fraud, because fraud is something you plan out. Theft is impulse.
Right. Agreed.
So, yeah.
And fraud is usually at a great...
I'm trying to pat my back here.
There you go.
Fraud is usually at a larger scale, too.
Yeah.
Than the theft.
Especially insurance fraud, because I had a particular case where a guy was hit by a car in a parking lot of a hospital. Not only was he suing the woman that hit him, but he was also suing the hospital as well. Because he was hit by a car in a hospital. So anyways, I ended up getting the case. I ended up falling. He was faking it like no tomorrow. And I caught him all doing all kinds of things. To say the least, he didn't win. And he actually got charged with fraud.
There you go.
Yeah. So it's interesting. It's very interesting. You know, it's funny. We all have this perception of on how things are done, but when you're actually speaking to somebody and getting a real explanation of what's going on and why the justice system does this, it mm-hmm. makes a hell of a lot more sense. Because let's be honest, we're not in law. Haley's not in law.
Yeah.
We look at it as an outside party going, okay, well, why did that happen? But when you're explaining certain things, they'll go, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. So it's just, it's really cool. Haley?
No, yeah, I was going to ask, so would you have ever experienced things that were on the flip side then of like the insurance fraud? So like maybe an opposite situation of Brian where, and I don't want to do doom and gloom or ever, but I know that I live in America where we have 24-hour news that wants us to be scared of everything. And so these are the questions that I know people are going to be thinking of, but like, what are some things maybe that you would have experienced on the opposite side where an insurance company is like specifically trying not to have to pay someone out or, you know, that kind of thing where it would be like calling out fraud or accusing of fraud where it was something more like trying to avoid that kind of a thing? Or am I just doing again, doom and gloom and creating the movie in my head?
That really isn't an area in which I was focused on in my practice with respect to those type of cases where insurance fraud or something of that nature. I was more geared towards the larger type frauds against banking institutions or things of that nature. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, can you go into a little bit of that then? So, I mean, like, obviously some of the bigger, like, banking fraud schemes, like, they're, you know, those are some of the ones that are, like, really big in America, right? And obviously kind of the focus of a number of different, like, elements of our pop culture, whether it's movies or TV, right? So get into that a little bit.
Well, they're pretty big up here, too, especially for a while there, back in the early 2000s, where mortgage frauds were out of control. And it was so easy to be able to go and register a mortgage against someone's home. So they would put together fake ID and show up at the bank and do all the paperwork and get approved for a mortgage, register the mortgage, get the money. And the person wasn't even the owner of the house. There were a number of cases where some individuals did this professionally, shall we say.
That's all they did.
And numerous of cases. And lawyers got involved, got charged for having been accessories to these mortgages. People were turning around. A couple of cases that I'm aware of, I didn't represent them, but where children of elderly parents would turn around and put a mortgage on their parents' home and use the money for for gambling, whatever means that they were using it for. And then the next thing the parents knew that they're getting a knock on the door from the sheriff's office because they're being served for failure to make payments of their mortgage and not having done anything after being served. They never received anything. They didn't understand what was going on. And
I must be dumb because I would have never, ever thought about doing that or anything to my parents. Like, these are your parents, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
And you're wow.
And it's an amazing thing, too, to think about from like the perspective of now, just that people that it was so easy to get away with that. Right. And so, you know, it's a complaint that a lot of people have. Certainly, I know in like my state, the idea of like, you know, red tape and too many regulations and how law is so like overly complicated. Well, this is why. Right. Because before you had that, people could get away with all these wild, crazy things.
And that's the whole thing. The entire system worked on honesty and goodwill. And then here comes a group of people who decided, well, here's an opportunity to benefit from it. And that's exactly it. This is why they had to put in all of the other types of checks and balances and verifications and on and on and on, including at one time, mortgages were registered manually at a registry office. Now it's done electronically. You have to have a special code to be able to log on. Not to say that if you're able to put all that together, that you can't still do it, because you still could, or with the assistance of a lawyer who will turn a blind eye to what's going on. But the reality is that a lot of these systems are put in place to prevent fraud is because of the fact that the honesty and integrity aspect of the process has been abused. And this is what we've seen over the last 20 or so years.
Yeah. I want to ask you a question, and I'm not exactly sure if you're going to be able to answer it or not. And if you can't, just let me know. Okay.
Of course.
What is your feeling? Because obviously we don't have the death penalty here in Canada. And I think we got rid of it. What was the date we got rid of that? I can't recall the date we got rid of it, but what is your personal feelings on the death penalty?
That's a difficult issue. And I do struggle with that, because we do see cases where people have been wrongfully convicted. Mm-hmm. And once they're executed, it ends there. There's no further investigation. No one is looking into it any further to see whether the individual is in fact innocent. If it's a clear cut case, and what is a clear cut case?
Right.
Where you have everything in place, you have all the witnesses, they all see it, then that's a whole different story.
Well, you know, the other perspective with capital punishment that I think is interesting and kind of overlooked is, what about the people who have to carry out that capital punishment? You're now asking those people to go and, you know, say people generally think like, oh, well, we feel fine with the idea of capital punishment of a murderer or a serial murderer. Okay, but then you're also going to now go ask these other people to carry out that same kind of an act on behalf of the public without really thinking about how that affects their mental or emotional health, that you know, somebody has to do that job, right?
Absolutely. But I think it's interesting that I did have an opportunity to meet someone who that was exactly their role, was to perform the execution. And quite frankly, the attitude that I got, or the sense that I got from the person, was, number one, it was their job and they were carrying it out just like as if they were put on the front lines as a soldier. It was their responsibility and their duty to carry it out. And once the system was exhausted, then they felt that all the checks and balances had been taken care of, and they were just carrying out their responsibility to society. So you have that also. Mm-hmm. Now, is that willful blindness in a sense? Well, maybe. Yeah. Cloaking the whole thing in this duty aspect.
Well, right, because, you know, turning that blind, it's like, I understand from a human perspective why you have to do it if you do a job like that, right? I mean, you compare it to a soldier, look at soldiers who come back with PTSD and all kinds of issues, right? Because of the things they carried out in the line of duty, right? That were still very difficult as a human being to experience, right? So it's an interesting conversation to be had, but obviously I think the biggest thing is that, yeah, people who are innocent do get convicted of things. And
we see it all the time. See it all the time. Yeah.
And the capital punishment element, you're right. Like, you can't go back and investigate that. You can't go back and fix it once you find out that you were wrong.
Exactly. Right? And some of these people are in there 10, 20, 30 years before they're proven innocent.
And going back to Canada being so nice, I think that's probably why we got rid of it, because Canada is a very nice country.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm all for it. I support that. It, you know, there are flaws and there are things that happen that, you know, the innocent people do get convicted of.
Hey,
things,
listen,
and
there,
I do. Okay.
Go ahead, Carmen. Go ahead, Carmen.
I want to address something here, and I want to make sure that it's clear. The majority of law enforcement, they do a good job. They work hard, they're out there to carry out their responsibility, their role, and their duty in the best way possible. Okay? Mistakes are made, and it happens. And you get wrongful convictions. And there are a number of steps along the way. Tunnel vision sometimes. You read about these cases after the fact, how they were investigated. But hindsight is 20/20 in all these aspects. So I don't want it to sound as if I'm disparaging law enforcement, because I'm not. I'm not.
Oh no, and you know the other
the system and the entire process. I am not.
Well, the other element to that, I would say too, is when you have obviously like officers who are overworked, law enforcement people who don't have enough, you know, a big enough team or support, and obviously, you know, they do have a stressful job, right? So, who among us don't make mistakes when we're stressed, right? We're human. It's just, you know, obviously in law enforcement, there's a little bit more weight to a mistake than, you know, me and my oopsie paperwork in an admin situation, right? Like there's obviously more weight to it. So there is that element too, that, you know, we are all humans at the end of the day, and we do all make mistakes, and we are all, you know, sometimes you just have a bad day, and sometimes that means a mistake is made.
Well, I will say there's a few people in Canada that are sitting in jail that should not be sitting in jail right now. They should have. I'm not for the capital punishment or death penalty. I'm not for it. Mm-hmm. But in some cases, there are a few people that really do deserve it. And I think you know who I'm talking about, Carmine.
Absolutely.
You know, there's, you know, Bruce MacArthur would be one of them. The guy that ran over all those people on Yonge Street probably deserves that. But again, he had a mental disability in some way. But, you know, look at Carla and Paul Bernardo.
Right.
Probably people that deserved it, you know, and, you know, for her only getting 12 years because of the deal she made, I think she planned that right from the beginning.
Let's address that.
Okay.
Do please.
Okay, good.
Had it not been for her, they never would have gotten him.
Oh, I know. But can't
forget that. They never would have had him. He still would have been out there free and still carrying out murders. So they had to go ahead and make the deal.
Of course. And I get that. And I agree with it. But at the same point, I think they were getting close. He knew that. And that's why she came forward and made a deal with them.
Close is not good enough.
Yeah, true. You're right. Very, very true.
They knew that if they didn't get something more solid, that he would have slipped through their fingers and would have been out there and potentially killed more people. So at that point they had to make the deal. They had to close the opportunity, and that.
Yeah, and I agree, but you know, there's a lot of people in Canada that don't agree. You know, and everybody says the same thing, that Carla knew that they were getting close, and that's why she went in there and made that deal. She had it planned out, the whole thing, and which is obviously speculation at best. Right. But you know, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of people that are in uproar, and you know, at the same time, you got to think about the families as well that lost their daughters, you know. Absolutely. And I have an old neighbor that I grew up with. He's a cop now, and he worked part of that case. And some of the pictures that he saw were just horrifying. And they, from what I understand, and he told me this, and I don't know if it's a secret or not, but I don't think it is. They actually use that case in their training, which I thought was really, really interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Haley.
No, I was just going to say, you know, the thing with capital punishment is that at the end of the day, it doesn't undo what they did. You can't bring back those people that those families are missing. You can't undo that. So, yeah, you know, just going ahead and going with the capital punishment, you're just continuing and perpetuating that act, that negativity. Like, it doesn't end with that. It doesn't fix it. It doesn't bring anyone.
It does not bring closure to the family necessarily.
Yep.
No, yeah, because you're still missing that person, and it was still an awful, horrible thing that happened that you have to.
You know that story, right, Haley? You know that story?
Yeah. I'm a little bit familiar with it, and it's, you know, as someone who is a consumer of true crime, you know, going back to, you know, as far back as they will tell true crime stories, you know, it is a concept that comes up a lot in like the true crime podcasts and other things that I listen to. That, you know, you can go ahead and do that capital punishment thing if you want to, but at the end of the day, it doesn't correct any of the harm that was done. Right.
Unfortunately, nobody wins. Nobody wins. Unfortunately,
there is just no way to win in it. And it's a very difficult thing, but you know, and I'm sure that's something that you probably saw a lot of and had to deal with, you know, being in that sphere.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of curious, Carmen, what made you get into this particular practice of law that you're doing or that you did?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a loaded question?
A little bit. Something that I'd rather just kind of keep to myself. But I think it'd be enough to say that I was born in the 60s. Okay. I was the son of Italian immigrants that came to Canada in the 50s. Okay. And there was a need for representation in the legal field for the immigrants. And that was not just Italians, but for the immigrants. So that was my motivation.
And
I mean, that's amazing, getting into it for the right reasons, that, and, you know, recognizing that there's, again, going back to what we talked about, the cultural differences that might cause misunderstandings, you know, and get people caught up in things that they don't belong in, and really is the right reason to get into it. So,
Well, thank you. So Kraft Dinner.
Let's just go ahead and shift right into craft dinner, because that's where we'd like to be.
I was just kidding. It was getting too serious.
I know. End on a higher happy note, right? There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
You got to shift into the more fun stuff. Well, let's go ahead and shift into The Sopranos then, just for funsies. Did you ever watch The Sopranos with, like, because just if you have the organized crime background,
I watched every single episode from the beginning to the end at least 4 or 5 times.
I'm way past that. I love The Sopranos.
Okay, well, so then can you talk a little bit about, like, how true to criminal justice, like, life or like the things that they portrayed, like how true to life would you say those were?
Okay, interestingly enough, in my opinion, mm-hmm. The Sopranos was probably the closest to real life than a lot of the other movies, like The Godfather and things, you know, movies of that type. I think Sopranos mm-hmm. was probably the best representation of what that lifestyle is really about. There is this myth of this structured hierarchy that's solid, and it really doesn't go to that extent. I think that The Godfather and other movies that tried to depict that kind of structure and that kind of solidness and concreteness to it, no pun intended, is not the way it's not the way it is. It really isn't. You know, that's the one thing I liked about The Sopranos, that the comical aspects and the screw ups and the things that happen and the fun, that part of it is probably closest to reality than a lot of the other shows and movies that we've seen in a long time. So,
it's interesting. I recently read some stories on James Anthony Soprano for him to get into character, what he would do would put a pebble in his shoe and he would walk with that pebble in the shoe. And that's why he always looks so angry.
Well, that is some method acting awesomeness I did not know about that. I'm so glad I've learned today.
Yeah. And another thing he did to get into character was if he had a very big scene, a very big like fight scene or something, he would not sleep.
I heard that one. Yes.
Yes.
That's bonkers.
Yeah, which was really interesting. But, you know, it's his character, and I'm glad you got onto The Sopranos because it was one of my favorite all-time series. They actually, and I don't know if you guys have heard this, but he actually had real-life mobsters actually calling him and telling him how wonderful a job he's doing portraying our, I don't want to say industry, but portraying these,
the
mobsters or the lifestyle.
Right.
Apparently, he had mobsters calling him all the time, telling him how wonderful a job he was doing.
Listen, that's a better reason for them to call you than whatever the opposite would be. So,
Well, you know, Pauly, the actor who played Pauly, he was a former mobster.
Yes, I heard that.
And as you're saying, but they actually had people coming on set there and kind of consulting the directors and the writers on how to conduct themselves properly. There's that story where James Gandolfini, I think it was him that received a phone call in the middle of the night and where he was told that a real boss never wears shorts. Because he had done a scene where he had the barbecue scene and he's wearing shorts in his backyard, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Which he did a lot.
Is there a reason for that? A real boss never wears shorts?
It's all about respect. It's about respect.
Yep.
Yeah, it's about respect. I know that one for sure. Now, what's interesting is AJ, and he talks about this all the time. His father was in the mob. And his father was a hitman for the mob.
So
it's too bad AJ's missing this because he was really excited about doing this show with you. But his father, I don't know when his father died. His father died. Chris is in the room right now. Chris, do you know when his father died? I think it's been in the last 4 or 5 years. His father passed away, but yeah, his father was a hitman.
That's wild. That's,
yeah. So, that's very, very interesting.
Where is he?
He lives in Connecticut.
Okay.
Which is obviously not about 30 minutes away from New York. Right.
So, I was going to say the tri-state area, New York, Connecticut, right?
But it's interesting. Eh?
Is there any particular reason for that? I mean, I know South Dakota is not, you know, super duper exciting for whatever the mob might be getting into, but like
if somebody steals something at a store, that's exciting in South Dakota.
I mean, listen, if you hop onto our 911 stuff and watch things, sometimes it is a little bit exciting. Every now and then we have an actual real crime. A wellness check on somebody because been a car that somebody hasn't moved off the street for too long or whatever.
Before we cut this off for tonight, is there one particular story that you can share that just, you don't have to say names or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can, but is there one particular story out of your career as being a criminal lawyer, something that really stands out to you that you go, wow, that was a real interesting case.
Well, it was almost comical. And it was a narcotics case. And I was representing this guy who was charged with trafficking in large quantities of cocaine.
Oh, wow.
And so we're in the court building, and the officer in charge comes over and starts talking to my client. They're off to the side, and they're talking, and they're chuckling and laughing, and I'm watching as I go over and I pull my client aside. I said, "Excuse me, but you're not supposed to be doing this." Well, it turns out that these two characters grew up together. They went to grammar school together. They went to junior high school together. They went to high school together. And at some point, they went in opposite directions. So it turned out that his buddy from way back when was the officer who actually nabbed him and charged him.
Wow.
So that was the most amazing thing. It was as if it was made for movie,
for TV, 100%. Like you could write a script episode for something on that and take that in and say, "Hey, give me this role. I'll play this here."
And they're both so professional about it. It was quite impressive. And I mean, interesting.
That's amazing that they could stand there and have a conversation and chuckle and laugh, even given the circumstances. Mm-hmm. Like, kudos to them for being able to have a friendship through that.
What was the end result of that case?
Yeah. Do we get to know?
Yes. He ended up pleading guilty, did his time. It probably took about 3 years before we brought him into court for a plea, and he did his time, and that was it.
How many years did he get?
At the time, if I remember correctly, I think he was given 6. It was out in 3 or 4.
Yeah, there you go. And that's, you know what, that's something else that I wanted to talk to you about, but we never got a chance. How these criminals get into, you know, they get 10 years and they get out in 3 years or 5 years or whatever for good behavior, which really seems kind of ironic because the reason they went in there was for bad behavior. But, you know, it never really made sense to me. But you know what, Carmine, I really, really appreciate you coming on today's show and taking the time out of your schedule. I know it's the weekend and you're probably relaxing. And I wanted to get into something else, but we never got into it. And I'm going to continue bugging you about it until you let me come there and do it. So
we'll talk about that. But listen, thank you so very much for having me on here. Haley, yeah. It was a pleasure meeting you.
Wonderful meeting you.
Haley, you want to say your goodbyes?
Your energy and your spirit, I feel it all the way here.
Thank you. You are absolutely going to end up being on a podcast with me. So don't be surprised when I be hitting connect on LinkedIn and saying, "Hey, buddy, come on over. Talk to me on my podcast."
Absolutely. And Brian, thank you so very much. Great seeing you again.
Thank you so much.
We'll talk soon, Carmine.
Crono, thank you very much for joining us.
Take care. Wow.
That was a great conversation. That was a lot of fun. We could have talked to him probably for another hour. We're going to snag him back for some more because that was great.
You're going to get him on your show and you guys.
I'm going to get him on. Oh, absolutely. You can't get away from me that easily.
Well,
I'm from South Dakota. I got a lasso.
Yeah. I want to let people know that Carmine's link is in the description. So if you want to go over and follow him on Facebook, you can do that. And Brian, you almost looked pretty. Thanks, Chris, for backing me up there, buddy.
Stop it. No, come on. Always in the pretty realm. Don't worry.
But no, that was great. I love talking to Carmine. We had a really good conversation, we talked back in December, and I love seeing him. I don't love seeing the towel, but, you know, that's another story.
Well, you know what? That's all right. You know what? You had a great guest on the podcast. You can stick it with a towel image for just a hot second to handle it.
You know, it's not only the towel. It was his face at looking at the guy cooking Kraft dinner or mac and cheese.
I'm going to go check out that link that Chris found, and I'm probably going to have to go buy myself some Kraft mac and cheese that I'm going to have to make just because I'm going to be like, "Man, now I want mac and cheese."
Yeah, I love mac and cheese. But who I want to thank you. I want to thank you for filling in for AJ.
Hey, no problem. Thank you. And I hope all is well with AJ, and appreciate you thinking of me. Listen, I had a great time. I was happy to be here. And I get another podcast guest out of it too. So hooray for me. So I appreciate you, Brent. And I appreciate everybody in the chat popping in.
Well, you know what? That's why we do this page. So
I love it.
When you see a guest from another show and you want to bring them on, there you go.
There you go. If you didn't talk enough about that one thing, then we're going to bring you on somebody else's stuff so you can talk some more about it.
Yeah, exactly. And Chris is right. We've had two great fill-ins in for the last 2 weeks. AJ wasn't feeling well last week, and now he had an emergency this week, and we had Chris on last week, you on this week. So I got two people I can go to that if it happens again. And I want to let people know we have a great show coming up on Tuesday on Through the Lens with me and Lex. If Lex is going to be there, if he's not, you're going to see Haley. But we're going to have Father Sean Whittington on the show. And I've always been a huge fan of Sean because he did have a show on Discovery Plus. Mm-hmm. And he's in the paranormal and demonology and all those type of things. So we're going to have him on the show on Tuesday. I was just on his show on Friday.
Love it.
He's an amazing guy. He's got such an amazing spirit. But if you're going to be a guest on his show, just realize that he stalks you.
Oh, I mean, listen, I was going to say, funny enough, the platform that my laptop sits on so that I have a better camera angle is my encyclopedia of demons and demonology. That's what I use to like lift it up a little bit. So fits right in on brand. There we go.
And I'm not saying stalking in a bad way. I'm saying stalking can learn more about you.
No, so. And that's how you should do. That's appropriate. I mean, we're podcasters. We know how that is. We stalk people too.
Oh, yeah, of course. But if you get a chance, watch that show, because I guarantee you're going to watch Sean on your show.
Oh, absolutely.
Father Sean or Father Whittington. He went from Reverend to Father. Okay. It just happened. So we're having him on the show on Tuesday with Tea Time with Tanner as well.
Tea Time with Tanner. What's up, Tanner?
Yeah, so hopefully you guys will be able to stop by for that. And again, Haley, thank you so much for filling in for AJ. We'll definitely talk soon. And I want to say thank you to everyone that came into the show tonight and for the people. And I don't say this enough. Thank you to the people on the podcast listening side to listening to our show. I hope you enjoyed it.
Thank everybody for joining us. We have so much love for you because we have so much fun doing these things. We're just glad everybody comes to join the party. We appreciate y'all.
Okay. Good night, everyone.
Bye.